Never fear, the captain shouted as he mounted to the helm. By God, you're in safe hands. Bring it up, action. And once again, that maniac with a fantastic sense of power comes upon the stage. And by the way, by way of disclaimer, the station takes absolutely no responsibility for what follows. Nor does the performer involved. There are certain things that must be classified as an act of God. Yes, indeed. You should hear the lyrics to this tune. These are so obscene, I can't even think of them without, you know, getting in trouble. Keep your eye on me, George. I'm moving fast. Keep your eye on me, George. I was sitting around here thinking of names, you know, for rock groups again. I think of these great names. You know, I just can't help it. It's like, I'll tell you what it's like. Have you ever had the peanut butter experience? I mean, have you ever really gotten all peanut buttered up? You know what I mean? Where, you know, you come in and you made a fantastic mistake at Christie's. You brought home some Skippy chunk peanut butter. And the next thing you know, you're just making a total slobby or something. You know, eating the peanut butter and rolling around on the floor and yelling, kicking your shoes off and all that stuff. Well, you know, it gets you. You see, after a while, you can't stop it. Well, about maybe 6 weeks ago, innocently, see, I'm sitting in Edick's. You know, fashionable Needix. I'm having lunch there with Johnny Kyson and Hugh Downs. And we're sitting in Needix. See, we're having the hot dog and some orange drink. And Spiro Agnew came in, sat down. See, we're sitting. You know, we celebrities all hang around together, you know. We're sitting there eating the hot dogs. And I'm knocking down a Piccalilli. And I can't explain to you how it came to me. All of a sudden, I looked at that. See, I couldn't help it, see. Just hit me. I suddenly thought of a name for a rock group. I never thought of names of rock groups before. When I figured, you know, live and let live is the way I say it, you know. If a rock group wants to have a name, let it have a name. I'm not going to, you know, get bugged by that. And it just hit me like that, you know. Needick and the Five Piccalillis. Well, that was my first attempt. It was bad. I admit it. It was bad. Ever since that time, I can't help it. I sit in the subway, you know, all of a sudden I think of a rock group. You know, I invariably crack myself up, you know. I'd laugh and fall over and make a fool of myself. Like, for example, the other day I thought of this one. How about Monty Rushmore and the Graven Images? How about the Holland Tunnel and the Toll Takers? Do you like the Stoned Mountain Memorial? It's not bad at all, is it, gang? Eh? Not at all, you know? How about Yosemite and the Old Faithfuls? You got to think of that one. Do I have to explain it to you? Yosemite and the Old Faithfuls. Not bad, see? How about the Moving Desert of Maine? Now, that's poetic, see. You mean you've never seen those things on the back of cars that said, I visited the Moving Desert of Maine? How about Cowboy Village in New Jersey? You ever see that one, Cowboy Land? And I thought of this one. How about Natty, Bumpo, and the Deer Slayers? Not bad. Of course, you've got to be literate, you know, to understand that one. And that cuts out 97% of the rock audience, so that kills that one. Natty, Bumpo, and the Deer Slayers. And I thought of a great traditional group, which we will now hear performing for us.
Hot Lips Hoffman and the Chicago 7. Must always keep them demanding more. Always leave them screaming and yelling and insisting on more. And that's all right, gang. I'll return. That's all right. Don't. We just keep dole. No. You never do that. You dole talent out sparingly. Leave me Hamlet every hour on the hour on Channel 9. You wouldn't care after the third week. You wouldn't care. You, in fact, you'd find watching a commercial great relief. By the way, how you doing in there, watching commercials? Have you noticed that the commercials have taken a new turn in the car world? They're taking on a religious turn. They used to be, status symbols. You know, everybody knows about the status symbol. And then for a while, they were all sex, There was this whole bit about, sexual symbols of cars and stuff. Then they went through the Walter Mitty phase, where, like a giant jet panel. You sit in there, the pretend you're taking off. Remember those commercials when they had airline pilots getting into their car? And they're going through the checklist, flipping on the things. It says the emergency brake off and all that stuff, clicking it on, Well, that was the Walter Mitty phase of cars. Now it's the religious phase. And that's a new phase entirely. Haven't you seen the Buick ads? At last, something you can believe in. Your Buick. Wish I had a little, ecclesiastical music to play behind that, when the Electra comes rolling out. Incidentally, that's a rather curious car to be, the idea of Electra. Do any of you know much about Electra? That was the original lady who led the original Women's Liberation Front. I want to tell you, she was a tough lady. And what she did to Orestes, Oh, mamma mia. That was bad news. Do you remember Orestes? Orestes has nothing to do with getting busted. This is a Greek phrase. Orestes. I hate to get literate. After it's midweek and people are worried, in the middle of the week, you start having intimations of mortality. And we understand that. And by the way, that's a great name for a rock group. The Intimations of Mortality. Not bad at all, we're getting calls from all kinds of rock groups asking if they can use the names that I'm turning out. Well, actually, I know that I'm responsible for a couple of rock groups that do have names. For example, you ever heard of Shep and the Limelighters? You ever heard of that group? Yeah, well, they're not very good, but, it's so sad to have a bad rock group named after you. Did you ever hear the Led Zeppelin? Well, that's from my book. You mean you never read In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash? Well, there's a very important sequence in it that involves a Led Zeppelin. And that is what we call the funny coincidence department. You see, not too many people know, what a Led Zeppelin refers to. And I'm quite sure that many of you don't. And that's quite understandable. You notice that I'm being tolerant. Must always be tolerant of the less favored. Yes, you must. I learned that at my mother's knee. Incidentally, I see that there's a magazine out now that has Norman Rockwell's erotic drawings. And, that's a scary one, I'll tell you this. Yeah, it's a new magazine called Avant Gauche. And, six of one, half dozen of the other. You pick them up as you go, You try. You always hope for the best. It's like the other day I'm watching this movie, I occasionally watch movies, In fact, to be totally honest with you, I have a bad problem that I find myself mainlining old movies. And I sit there, you know, I can't stop, you know. And sometimes the set goes... sometimes I find myself actually watching the morning prayer. That really scares me, you know. Out comes this stained glass and this transcribed reverend comes on. It's at 5 in the morning and he's... It's just discouraging, like one morning, see, I'm watching, you know, give us this day, it comes on. Have you ever stayed up that late where you see the prayer come on? Well, one morning I saw a scary thing. Any of you out there are theologians? Are there any theologians out there working? You know, working theologians. I'm not talking about dilettanti theologians. I mean working theologians. Well, I have a theological problem I want to ask you. It is this. One morning at 5:10 a.m., I'm waiting for the last scene of this Chester Morris movie I'm watching. See, it was filmed late in the fall of 1910, underwater, apparently. It was very murky. And it was obviously shot originally in silent film. It was silent, you see, and had apparently been dubbed originally in Greek. Because it was very interesting because the sound, it's a very good movie, and it was sponsored by Preparation H or something. I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm digging it. And he is flying this airplane, and it's burning. He is crashing. You can see the clouds going vertically all around him. And incidentally, that's something that, as a flyer, I can tell you, clouds don't do what clouds do in airplane movies. They don't go sideways past you when your airplane is diving. It just doesn't work that way, friends. In fact, I had one unfortunate experience when I did dive an airplane. It didn't exactly work that way. But nevertheless, Chester Morris is sitting in the scarf, is out, you know, behind him, and the plane is on fire. There's a quick cut to Alan Hale. And he says, he's crashing. I knew I shouldn't have sent my best friend up in that crate. And it's coming down, saying, we flyers tend to, you know, get a little nervous and jumpy when we see movies like that. And so all of a sudden, without any warning, the film cuts off. Because I guess they figured that anybody's watching a 1911 Chester Morris movie at 5:10 a.m. doesn't care what the end is. It's totally, it's academic. So it cuts off. He's going to crash. I don't ever know what happened. On came that, you know, boom, 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 in that little city. Dun, 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 little lights going off and on. I said, you mean to tell me they're going to fake out? They're not going to let me know what happened? It goes, you know, the lights go off. You know how those little apartment lights go off like that? Do you ever watch those and figure one time they're not going to get them all off? It always looks like they're not going to quite make it, you know? They always do. And the little lights go off. And I see the lights go off, you see. And the next thing I know, it goes... Bringing in the sheaves. They're playing the music. And on comes Give Us This Day. The stained glass window. And before I could get to the knob, the reverend is there. See, and he starts to talk. And he says, I want all of you out there this morning to look deep into your souls. I want all of you to realize where you have sinned. Zap. The film broke. And out comes the sign, says, one moment, please. And I know they're splicing the film. Well, now, the question I want to ask to any theologians, does God pause and wait? In the middle of a broken film, does he say, wait, hold it, everybody up here. We want to make sure we get what they want. And they broke the film. Hold it. Wait till they splice it. Well, then it came back on, but somehow they had spliced it after the, you know, half the prayer was gone. Well, obviously, this was kind of bad news, and he finishes, thank you and good night, and then it says, it's just the Reverend J.L. Dill Dockery, D.T.T. from the Fourth Church of the Holy Roller, D.T.T. And I came this, I thought it was kind of nice, you know, and I thought about this for a minute, then I said, you know, this is transcribed. I might be the only guy in this. The reverend has been asleep for hours. And anyway, he was in Pittsburgh, it said. And, you know, here it was in New York. And I wondered whether or not a transcript... this is a serious theological question I wish to ask you. I'm not being sacrilegious. This is a serious theological question. Does a rerun filmed prayer count as much as an original live one? I mean, up in the front office. Now, we know there, here on Earth, we know that the rerun, the filmed rerun of any show is always much less in the way of, for example, talent fees, rerun, all that stuff. And by the 37th rerun, you can get at almost any show that's on the air for about, maybe $4 a year, roughly. I mean, you know, seriously, you can get reruns now of the Milton Berle original Texaco show. And they're paying people to put that one on. So, oh, by the way, the station of the 70s would be the first to put that on if it could get its hands on them. This is WOR. WOR. In the friendly old New York. And incidentally, we've gotten all kinds of letters from Yugoslavian citizens who pointed out that WOR is indeed a highly provocative word in Yugoslavia. And for those of you who are over 21 and are qualified art students and also have a deep and abiding interest in social studies, we will send you the translation of WOR from the original Yugoslavian, which, by the way, appears in several of their epic poems of the late 19th century. We would be glad to send it off to you, providing, you know, you'll treat it with the proper respect. It's troubled too many people, no respect. And we would like to have a more respect if possible. I still kind of like Natty Bumpo and the Deer Slayers. Can't you see them all out there, you know, with their leather leggings, you know, a whole bit, and one of them I'm sorry. Oh, you don't know who Natty Bumpo was? What was the name of that Indian he hung around with? Chickamauga? No, get out of here. That's a battle in the War of 1812. I know that. Speaking of that, how about John Paul Jones and the Torpedoes? That's not bad. You know, it gives a little historical, kind of a deep historical, traditional meaning to you. I think most of you could stand a little style in your life, right? I can't say that on the air. There are women and children listening. I'm sorry, madam. I refuse to do that. Which reminds me, do you have a commercial in there, George? Of course, I knew you would. All right, let's hit it big. Come on. Great Scott, it is big. What is it?
New Yorkers are raving about
the adventurers. Oh, you should hear him rave.
Very realistic. Real and raw.
Great action film.
One guy said, burn the theater down.
Pictures I've seen.
Turkey.
Performances were excellent.
One hell of a picture.
Oh.
Terrific. Tremendous.
Fantastic.
Don't talk like that. There are kids listening.
New Yorkers are raving about the adventurers.
The whole picture is a fantastic picture. I like to see it again.
Great. So real. Fantastic.
Gee, this is an intellectual group, isn't it?
It was a four-star movie. This is it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Joseph E. Levine presents the Lewis Gilbert film of The Adventurers, based on Harold Robbins' sensational bestseller.
Ooh, boy, is he a good
The
writer.
Adventurers, from Paramount Pictures.
He's a
rated
good
R, restricted. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Yeah, The Adventurers, now at the DeMille Theater. 34th Street East and Louis Orpheum Theater. It's a good picture.
Do you have Millers in there, Miller? Gee, who was that guy that did that great tag on that commercial? Fantastic voice. Sounded like Arnold Stang after an unbelievably bad weekend. Let's see, we have a note here. It says, what is better than a six-pack of Miller High Life? Well, that is a provocative question. Of course, the obvious answer, according to the agency, I can think of a couple of things that are better than a six-pack of Miller High Life, but, you know, it's personal preference. But the obvious answer is 12-pack. Isn't this something? Here we are every night telling everybody listening to get skunked. Well, that's it. I mean, if you drink a 12-pack of Miller High Life, friends, it's going to be a lot of action around your house. One dozen cans come in the handy, easy-to-carry, easy-to-store, easy-to-cool Miller 12-pack. And as you know, you get twice as much of that hearty, robust, deep-down, good Miller High Life beer flavor. And if you sample a 12-pack, you'll know why they call it Miller High Life. Yes, sir, you suddenly understand the name. For over 3,115 years, according to the copy, Miller's been known as the champagne of beers. This must be a misprint. Can't be over 2,000 years, Lee. After 3,000, that stretches a little bit. Miller makes it right. And, friend, that's a good question. I'll have to ask you, do you make it right? I mean, you know, I don't want to say anything bad. You know, it's not to upset you, but it is a good question. And by the way, speaking of good questions, we all have our, you know, our bad crimes that we have to admit to. And hey, speaking of crimes, would you bring your washboard in here, please? Please, just bring the washboard in. Say nothing. I've got a real thing here for you tonight. Just hang in there. Just bring it in and sit down over there. No, I've got a thing. Is he getting it? He's getting his washboard. Just bring it in. No, in here. Bring your thimbles. What kind of a ballet is going on in there? Oh, I see. He's putting his thimbles on. Well, we've got something very special for you tonight. I want you to listen carefully to it. It's a salute to life here. And while we're on the subject of saluting life, is he getting it in there? What's he doing? Making those thimbles? What? Putting them on, huh? Well, tell him to come in here and put them on. You see, you know, they're portable. He can carry them around. All right, here we go now. All right, now, you sit over there, see? Pull that chair back. Sit over there. Is this live over here, George? Can you make it live? All right, listen. Just give us one thrum on it. Don't say a word. You just keep quiet. Oh, man, what a sound. Do it again. Oh, my God, what a sound. Do it again. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Whew. Hear that cowbell. Oh, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Now, you listen carefully to me and you follow it. You follow me. Just hold on a minute. I want to try. Yeah, you want to do a little head thumping here? Let me do something here that I think may just work. I don't think you can hear that in there, George. You won't be able to hear the sound of that thing in there. Now I want to hear that again. Just give me one thrum. Because that gives me inspiration. Oh man, that's shut up. Oh, what a sound! Do that again. Listen to that. There ain't a dry eye in the audience. Once more. Yeah. Now watch. Well, you want to do something? You follow my cue. All right. Now we track that from the top again. That was a good rehearsal. We'll try it from the top. Here we go. Okay, not bad, is it, for jazz? Now we'll try another thing. Now watch this one. Watch carefully. Sounds are made. All right, now give me, use just the cymbal, or rather give me just the thimbles.
Ha
kinds of sounds, can't you? All right. Mammy little baby love shortening, shortening. Mammy little baby love shortening bread. Mammy little baby love shortening, shortening. Mammy little baby loves shortening bread. Very nice. How about this one? Tramp, 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 the boys are marching, marching off again to war. Ta da 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 da. Let's try from the top again now. Let's try that one. Tramp, 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 the boys are marching, oh, marching off again to war. You're impressed, aren't you, Dave? You are just hearing a small preview of what is going to happen tonight or tomorrow night at Princeton. I'm sorry, Friday night. Don't get excited, baby. Friday night at Princeton. One of the boys from the jug band is here tonight. In fact, the whole jug band is here tonight. We've been rehearsing. Let's see, we put in over 12, maybe 15 minutes of rehearsal. Which means that this is going to be a show that is tight. Tight, direct, completely cohesive. Beautifully orchestrated, in fact, choreographed. Now, here's another little a little surprise. We're going to give you a little preview of what it's going to sound like tomorrow night. Ain't that easy? If you know how. Well, wait till you hear this one now. George, you got a little echo chamber in there? All right, now let's give him something real good here. Now watch this. We'll start out without an echo chamber, George, and we'll build it up real fast. I'm going to play this little hard, tight Austrian Jew's harp. Sound in it. Well, Friday night, we're going to be at Princeton, and it's going to be going to start all at 8 o'clock. Jug band's going to be there, Dave Lisker, the whole crowd, Natty Pompo, the whole gang is going to be hanging out there, Joe Semity and the Old Faithfuls, the whole thing, you know. We're going to do tap dancing. We're going to have Indian wrestling. There's going to be a tremendous Indian wrestling program. There's going to be an exhibition of log rolling. And, yes, this can be great. We're going to have a demolition derby. And after that, of course, by fantastic public outcry, I'm going to finally repeat my famous underwater ballet, which we've got the stage all wired in Alexander Hall. Police have been paid off. And everything's going to work out. I've got my bikini ready with the sequins. And the Greek chorus has been lined up. It's beautiful. I mean, people don't appreciate your beauty, you know. And I know there's going to be a lot of catcalls and yelling from the audience, but the voice of the Philistine is always heard, even in Princeton. Even in Princeton. That's going to be at Alexander Hall, Friday, 8 p.m., Princeton University. You know, they've university stays. For years, you know, they were this correspondence college, and now they're university, full university, and it's in Princeton, New Jersey, which you know is the Garden State. Oh, yes, plenty of gardens growing over there. A lot of them under people's sinks, you know. It's terrible, you know, sometimes, you know, you got to spray and everything. But nevertheless, this is Princeton, New Jersey, naturally. The tickets are available at the door, and you better get there early. Oh, yeah, we had fist fights last year and everything out in front of the door. Of course, the place seats 17 people, and, you know, have fights and everything, because 23 showed up. And, but it's going to be 8 o'clock. Are you ready now? 8 o'clock. That is at Princeton. And incidentally, we are going to be on Joe Franklin's show tomorrow night. Me and the jug band. We're just going to talk, you know, nothing. Because, you know, the jug band should be seen and not heard. That's an old Midwestern saying. No, all but say, I did not my saying. No, I don't mean that. No, no, it's not my saying at all. No, I use a lot of sayings that aren't mine. For example, penny saved is penny earned. I often say that, but that's not my saying. See, I didn't invent it. I just say it. Nothing, what's the one about the nothing leap, nothing bent? No, nothing venture, not, no, it's right on the tip of my tongue, and I forgot it. Now, do you want to try another one there? Let's go. Let's wing it from the top. Did everybody like that sound? You want to hear some more of these? This is me and my favorite washboard man. We're sitting here and watching. You want to hear this 1883 Jew's harp now? We'll get a different sound. Watch. Let's be a little. You want to be Russian. Let's be what they call Russian constructivist in our musical. Now you know what a constructivist is. Music in great block sounds. Now here we go now. Watch. It will be a block sound. Here we go. George, give me plenty of echo chamber on this one. The Jepip River. It's a Russian constructivist composition, which by Aki Morozovsky was magnificently performed by two outstanding performers of modern Russian music. Now, would you like to hear the bluebird sings over my tractor? That's a rough translation of the early Russian. Now, this requires a great deal of concentration on the part of both the listener and the performer, and is extremely romantic, yet bitterly and totally realistic in its pursuit and its destruction of imperialistic, capitalistic pig-dog morality. Here we go. Sound of the 817 passing at the end there, which is a highly, highly ironic comment on modern 20th century materialistic life. And you notice the distinct sound of sentimentality, yet a hard grasp of the realities of day-to-day living on a collected farm. Now, that I thought it was kind of nice. Now, would you like to hear another one? Do any of you like to hear another one? This is known as the Great Generator at Blosk. It's a romantic. By the way, this was a popular tune that was on the top of the Moscow Art Parade hit parade for over 12 years. Tremendous, tremendous piece of music. And if you'd like to hear it again, the Great Generator at Blosk.
Thank you.
generator at Blotsk. It was a beautiful piece of music. You can understand why it was the top of the hit parade in Moscow for 12 years. Of course, it was the only tune that was written in 15 years. It's a very difficult tune to perform. Did you like it in there? Just a slight modicum of a hint of what you're going to hear at Princeton. At 8 o'clock. Of course, there's going to be a lot of tap dancing, too. Now, we will give you an illustration of what we mean by, again, Russian romantic constructivist music. This is a bitter comment on the attack upon Moscow late in the 12th century by the Third Army of Hussars under Klavnik III. And it's a beautiful, beautiful folk tune. All right, all set. Now, here we go, George. It's a brief charge of the artillery there. And highly pictorial. Very, very pictorial. Very good. an exciting show tonight. Now, it really has, you know. Just once in a while we do a show that's totally dedicated to art. And we like to, present it with the most... Not really dignity, I suppose you could say, respect. Now, would you care to hear more? Would you like to? All right. This is a romantic love ballad, which, by the way, comes from the Bulgarian steppes. This is a piece of music which not only is romantic, but is traditional. And was first heard and sung by the corsairs as they sailed over the Black Sea in quest of the beluga sturgeon. It's very early in the days, and of course, was all sail. And you'll notice that there's a lot of reference to the wind, references to the life, the hard life that they lived at sea. You know, sometimes they would go out looking for beluga salmon and wouldn't come back for maybe 20 or 30 years. And when they would return, of course, it was so hot there that quite often the beluga salmon was spoiled when they got in. And so for that reason, it is really a sorrowful song. It is called The Pursuit of the Beluga Salmon Sometimes is a Drag. Now, so if you will please bear with us now, we'll prepare the equipment. We're all set to go. Now, that's the sound. I'll explain it as we go. That's the sound of the great oars, the great sweeping oars, as they move the early Russian boats out to sea. And now we proceed, you see, as they get out to sea... The simple peasant seamen begin to sing their chant of the spoiled beluga sturgeon. They know, of course, already that the quest will be useless. And this is, naturally, it's a, let's put it this way, it's a kind of a symbolic evocation of the absurdity of all life. Yet, it's a hymn to the basic dignity of the human experience. So... Now they are out to sea. They have been rowing. You see, the first course is repeated maybe 20 minutes, sometimes upwards of half an hour, because sometimes the tide is against them, you see. Then when they get out, really out, after a bit, they begin to sing this sad song. Now of the anchor chain as it tumbles into the Black Sea. Was the sound of the first sailor after 34 years on the pounding main of the Black Sea, reaching land and finally arriving home to greet his girlfriend. And so tonight we've had an interesting exposition of the Russian impressionistic constructivist school of romantic music of the early 20th century. Those of you who request transcripts of the broadcast, please send your name and address to the Institute of Higher Learning in conjunction with Man's Eternal Drive for a deeper understanding of the arts of all the peoples of the world. This was sent to you as a special public service broadcast of the Deep Thinking Unit here at this concerned radio station. We'll see you, around